100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. Maven makes the highest quality optics at half the price of their competitors through their direct-to-consumer business model. The brand new B7 represents the expansion of their compact lineup and is designed to be more compact and portable than their acclaimed B3 Bino. With a smaller objective lens, the binocular takes a significant leap in terms of size reduction. The B7 is available in both an 8x and 10x option, making it their most compact premium binocular yet. If you're looking for something that will fit in your pocket for deer hunting, turkey hunting, or scouting missions, but still want crystal clear optics, check out the new B7 from Maven. All their optics come with a lifetime, no-fault warranty. If you run it over with your truck or your significant other chucks it at your head, they'll repair or replace it. Use code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift on any full-price optics order at mavenbuilt.com. Better Backstrap's mission is to provide the highest quality seasoning for the meat you work so hard for. They wanted to give hunters another choice besides the big box store brands full of fillers and preservatives. Born right here in Pennsylvania, Better Backstrap Seasonings will turn up the taste of your wild game. Right now, you can pick up their sampler gift box, which includes gun season garlic, tall tine taco, and the original seasoning in a custom gift box. You can use the code EASTMEETSWEST for free shipping at betterbackstrap.com. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top, and then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by the man, Johnny Stewart, my cousin, Mason Martonic, and my dad, Joe Martonic. So these are some of the best, most accomplished big woods hunters that I personally know and during the archery seasons. And I've decided to do a roundtable discussion with them at Johnny's Deer Camp all about hunting the pre-rut and the rut. So specific topics will include first starting off with Johnny's story about his public land West Virginia buck that he took a few weeks ago, kind of breaking down that hunt and how he found success on an old 8-point on that piece of public ground. What to do when you're not finding sign, some late October strategies, the best time of the day for activity, the top scrape locations to hunt, how to figure out where to hunt and having confidence in doing that, which is by far, I did an Instagram survey, I don't know, a couple weeks ago about rut struggles and what people struggled with during the rut. And got 300 and some responses, and actually might even be more by the last time I looked at it, but it was very focused, probably 75-80% all about the same problem of not having confidence in their spot or having too many locations, not knowing where to go. So we cover that in detail, how much you should rely on trail cameras and more. So I split this up into two parts. So this is just what's part of this first part here. And then later this week, I'll drop the second episode, to break it into a little bit more bite-sized pieces so that you can listen to it rather than having just a big 2 hour and something long conversation. So broke that up into two parts for your listening pleasure. So I really enjoyed recording this episode with these guys and sitting down and talking through it, and always learn something no matter how much time I spend around them. Getting some of these questions out, I think was really good conversation. It's favorite time to be in the woods for us whitetail hunters, and in the big woods, I think there's no better time to capitalize than the next few weeks here. So I hope everyone has some luck with that. But first, I wanted to share the Mountain Buck Monday story of the week, which I just shared on East Meets West's Facebook and Instagram page yesterday, which is from Justin Crossley out of Pennsylvania. So Justin wrote in, "Years of trail camera data and scouting for consistent good buck sign has helped me narrow down locations in the northern PA big woods. One particular spot has become deadly over the years because I only hunt it once and I like to keep it fresh. This year I decided to try out a foldable decoy of a small 6-point buck that we called Dinker. On November 9th, I went into a spot and put Dinker out in front of me. I had planned on doing some calls, but it was super calm, so I decided to wait. And 20 minutes after legal shooting light, I heard something behind me, and I could see a buck coming up over the ridge, and he locked on to Dinker. After about a minute of a stare down, he turned and headed towards the decoy. It felt like forever as he would stop every few steps and stare at Dinker. He finally cleared some limbs, and I could arrow him at less than 10 yards as he was focused on the decoy. He ran just 60 yards and fell over. He was my biggest 8-point ever and my widest buck ever. I always use the wind and thermals to my advantage, and the decoy is just another tool to use in the big woods. I doubt it will always work this well, but it's worth the risk to me." And you need to go check out this photo. It's one of the widest deer that I've seen in a long time coming out of the big woods. So awesome buck, Justin. This isn't his first time on Mountain Buck Monday. Killed a big one a few years ago, I believe, that I had shared the story on. So must be doing something right. Congratulations on that. Really, really appreciate you sending that story in. And also, decoys are, we didn't talk about them at all in these couple podcasts here, but I do use decoys during the rut in specific locations if I'm trying to catch the attention of a deer and pull them over to a spot. Not in all situations do I use them, but I have used them and had luck with them, and also have had them become afraid of it too. So it's like, as Justin said, there's a risk element to it, but I think a lot of times, depending on the situation, it can work out in your favor. But with that being said, just dropped my New York buck video from last year. So that hunt happened on October 23rd, 2021. So I just released the video on that, where I self-filmed just kind of the process of it and showing it and getting that buck out. So still trying to put out stuff there on YouTube weekly outside of the podcast. So to go over and check that out. And if you like the YouTube channel, please give it a thumbs up, leave a comment, and subscribe. That helps out a ton. But yeah, just keeping down the rabbit hole and focusing on these podcasts to get out to you at this time of year. Personally, I've been out in the woods scouting quite a bit, a decent amount, just kind of trying to find fresh sign, and it's starting to definitely pop up. I think towards the end of this week here, I'm going to spend some time in the tree. Well, I definitely will be, but I'm still going to focus on at least a few hours a day as I'm trying to catch up with getting the content out and getting some articles I need written done. But focusing on just scouting and getting cameras set, whether I ever even hunt the areas this year, to get some intel for the following years, trying to get cameras out, moving around, and then putting together a plan. At least in my area, Spartan Forge is showing actually full range days starting the day that this podcast comes out, through the rest of this week. And in another area that I hunt, not until later in the week does it show full range movement. So that's exciting. But with that being said, I hope everyone has a great rest of your week and enjoys these couple podcast episodes. If you like them, share them with your friends, family, everything. That helps out so much. And also head over to the website if you want to check out the whole Deer Camp line of apparel at eastmeetswesthunt.com/shop. You can check that out, and we will talk to you soon. All right, I think we're live. John, are you ready?
I'm ready, bro. Oh yeah.
this is gonna be a good one. We're at Johnny's camp, and I guess the date here of recording this is October the 20th, so just about to get good. So looking, I guess, from your screen left to right, we got the man, Johnny Stewart, over here. How about Johnny? You do the introductions.
All right, so you got me, Johnny Stewart, the Johnny Stewart. How am I sounding? Good?
Yeah, you sound good.
Should I look at the camera?
You can do whatever you want, John.
I'm going to turn around. Backwards. Mountain Man Joe. He should be number one with the mic, not you. And we got, of course, what do we say? Mason got a nickname for his deflection? Or just Mason Martonic, the Elk Slayer.
There you go.
I like it.
And Bo.
What's mine?
The Great.
Wow. Bo knows.
Bo knows, yeah.
But anyways, yeah, we're at camp. It's the first time you've been at camp with us. We've been having time at camp, but we've, you know, haven't included you, I guess, up to this point at our camp.
What, your camp? Which camp?
Deer camp, my grandpa's camp.
This year, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get the invite.
You were down in Ohio.
I was sitting here sulking. I was like, I wonder if Bo's going to invite me up to camp.
I thought you were talking about all the times you're drinking beer at Johnny's camp and he wasn't here.
That's what I was thinking about. I thought we weren't going to say nothing, Bo.
Yeah.
Where you been, John? We've been here at your camp drinking, partying.
We cleaned up pretty nice.
You did good. I didn't know. I blamed it on the neighbor. Stayed once or twice. I was bitching at him.
Yeah. What were you saying with when the neighbor was staying here?
Greg,
about the gas meter.
Oh, yeah. I come up and he's working on his camp next door. He bought the camp next door. And I'd come up and he had damn thermostat on 75, you know, like he's paying, like he's not paying for it, you know. I come in, I said, damn, Greg. I said, we got to get some WD-40 on my gas meter. The bearings are wearing out. It's spinning so fast over here. You know what I mean? I said, throw a log on a fire. You don't have to use all my gas. So, he's out, though. He moved in next door.
Got it all figured out.
Got it finished, yep.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's nice area you got here. You got your food plots looking good back there.
It's green. It's the turnips didn't do real good. I think the biggest buck we got here is in the backyard at night. A good 12. Hmm. Probably
high. You never showed us the picture.
I lost it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We know how that goes.
The big 8, nice 12. Well, he's a 12. He got kickers off his 2s, but he's down here in the middle of the night. He'll probably daylight maybe when he needs to find a girlfriend, I'm thinking.
Got some does hanging around?
Oh, yeah. Neighbor shot one tonight. I had to go drag it out of the hollow for him.
Yeah, we got to camp, so me and my dad and Mason show up and open the door. We're yelling, no Johnny. There's a note written there. It looks like a preschool kid wrote it. Bo, I'm up on the hill dragging neighbor's doe.
Yeah.
Be back soon.
I told the neighbors at Honey, I said, just sit here in a blind. All the deer will come out in the field. You know, I only got not even an acre, and they got to go up in the woods and chase them around. So I got here. I was slaving over some jalapeno poppers, some hors d'oeuvres for the gang when they got here.
You
for
Bo. Did a good job with that, too.
Yeah, I had my recipe book out.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't believe that one second.
No.
You didn't even know how to turn your stove on.
That's the first time I use it. Oh, man. But the neighbor stopped. I need a hand. All right, I shot a doe, and he pulled out Offix, and he's like, I'm like, oh, like, what are you doing way up? I shot a doe way up the hollow, up over the mountain. I'm like, what? I got my four-wheeler. Let's go. So I get on the back of the four-wheeler. He got a four-wheeler trail. It goes all the way up there. And then we park. He's like, here it is over there. You know, and he got bad knees. I was like, take me through the jungle, down a mountain, down in a creek. He's like, I'll help you. I said, no, you just hold the light, you know.
It was all good. You weren't gone that long. Well, we only drank about 3 or 4 year beers while we were waiting.
When the lady neighbor showed up and said, hey, is anybody helping the guy that shot shot the doe? And I'm like, I think Johnny is. He left us a note. And she's like, oh, he's way up there. And I was like, oh, God, this is going to be a late night.
No.
But no, you were back down pretty quick. I mean, you were sweaty, but.
Like, I had beer to drink. I had to get done with that drag.
Yeah.
Give a dog a bone.
A little motivation.
Yeah.
That's your favorite stuff. I brought you some Big Truck.
Yeah, the Big Truck's good stuff. It's hazy IPA. I like it.
That's the best right there.
That's your guys' favorite?
Yeah.
Too bad we ain't got any more.
I didn't think that you guys were gonna drink at all before we started recording, but.
If we weren't waiting for Johnny, we probably would have had enough.
And the neighbor's like, they do a lot of butcher and make sausage. And what do you want? You want summer sausage? What do you want? He makes deer sticks, this and that. I said, yeah, Italian sausage. He said, I'll make you some. I said, yeah. He always drops stuff off. So I got some meat coming.
Oh, there you go. Well, you got some meat because you already shot a West Virginia buck.
Yeah, I got a nice deer about 40 minutes from my house near Pittsburgh. There's a piece of public that I grew up hunting. I haven't been there in 20 years. So I went out there this summer, dropped some cams, and got out there in September, and this deer was the biggest deer I had on camera. The camera's up in a tree aiming down. I had him, and when I checked it, I'm like, man, that's that's the biggest deer in here. I figured like maybe 100, maybe, you know, low 20s. I almost didn't want to shoot him. I was wanting something bigger. But then I saw him the one morning when I was hunting, and it was like, you know, he ain't bad. I'll have to take him out of the herd.
That's a great deer, especially for
he's
that
a good deer.
That's
yeah.
A good deer. That's a good deer.
I was happy with him. He was bedding in a cut, and he come up out of there like it never happens that way, but there was a little swell, a little ditch going down into the cut, and he come up that little ditch, maybe catching thermals, drifting down, and there was a little snag of trees that he gravitated to, and in that dip, and he stood there for a couple minutes. He come up, and I shot him, and that was it.
Well, explain how you were explaining to us earlier, like how you kind of found that spot. You're like, if there's a mature deer living here, you found like an eastern facing ridge, and it was on the far end of the public, basically, is what you were saying.
Yeah, I like finding biggest thing I find is more rugged, not so much gradual terrain, is east facing finger ridges, because it's with your southwest wind, you can't even get to them, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this was, and the north of the east face of that ridge line was private cut, and if you follow the ridge, it kind of, the left side of the ridge, near the point, near the end, was kind of gradual, and that was the private, and it was just like, I could see on Spartan Forge, it was kind of a flat, and I could see, being on the public, I could kind of see, I said, that's where he's living, you know, and I got him on camera once, but we had like 5 days of northeast wind. Any other time, I could have never hunted there. Southwest, west, west, southwest, never. I boiled his skull out, and I'd say he's probably, his teeth were wore down. I just compared I got his bottom jaw, but his top teeth in his skull were probably, I compared it with another year, I'm figuring he's probably at least six years old.
Yeah.
But I'm figuring, I got in there, it was October 2nd, and no, he'd been living there maybe for, in that area, probably 3 to 4 years, and doing the same thing, and just so comfortable with it. You know, it's association. He'd never seen anybody back there. It was a 40-minute walk from one side of the public to the other, and that early in October, he was just so comfortable with living and letting his guard down on that northeast wind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just keep doing what always worked, and it worked out. I shot him at 20 yards, and drag wasn't too bad. I had to go across. It would remind me of Bo dragging his deer, that big one, across the creek.
Yeah, you did have to do that.
Yeah.
Took the waders. So I drug him down to the creek. It was like a cliff. Half the time, deer just fell down a cliff to the creek. Then I had my buddy. I called my buddy, and he met me on the other side. And it took me an hour to get back to my ride. I had waders, and I drove all the way around, put them waders on. And it was right after some hurricane or somewhere come through, and we had 2 days of rain. And it was ripping pretty hardcore, you know?
Yeah.
So I got across, and it worked out pretty good. It was, I was wore out.
You're getting older.
Whoa, I am. I don't feel older. I feel good.
That's good.
You should see me dragging that doe, lightning.
I seen you coming down through the field.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wanted a beer, you know.
You're coming pretty hard.
That was my West Virginia. It was nice to shoot a deer in October because it's been so many years. Probably 15, 20 years since I shot a deer in October.
Well, you're always working in October.
Normally. Yeah, that four-letter word, yeah. So this year I kind of rearranged it and made sure I got some hunting time. It was nice to shoot a deer early, you know. I like that. And I feel like you can get on a little more of it. Like I said, no one's out there that early if you can find him. And he's still in his, you know, normal, maybe summertime, going into fall habits, and nobody's messing with him.
Yeah.
You can capitalize on him. You know, then you get in October, guys start getting out there, and then he might turn a little more nocturnal and that. But it was a fun hunt. Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah, you called it. You texted me that day and said you were going to shoot that buck, and you did. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly that. You're like, you felt good about it, you were confident in your setup, and it obviously worked out. And you're like, you were saying about that little swell that,
yeah,
that was
little
there.
Swell, it's in minute things, like when you start setting your tree stand up, you're like, okay, where, because you know you could shoot you know 30 40 yards each way, so I got to be exactly where he walks, and he don't just walk anywhere just for like loady dude, I'm just gonna walk here, like, you know what I mean? There's a reason for him. And then when I, you know, because that ridge line was probably 300-400 yards, and he was coming, it was cut on the north side the whole way, so okay, where's he coming out? And I just looked down that ridge line, I just seen that little dip going down in you know, which was to the north, into the private and the cut. And like I said, it was just like fish out in the ocean, they're going to gravitate towards something, you know? And then I seen that snag, a dead tree, and I said, he's going to walk right to that, and he's going to just, and he did exactly what, I'm like, wow, this never happens.
Yeah.
He stood there, and the thermals, you know, even though it was an east-northeast wind, you know, when that sun went down, the thermals drifted right down that ditch. So I made sure I was west 30 yards of that swell. I didn't want to, you know, because mm-hmm. he would have smelled me. So it worked out perfectly. You know, you got to be meticulous and, you know.
Yeah, to get in bow range, you know, it's a whole different world. What do you think, like, so you said it was like a northeast wind and it was kind of set up, you know, with that east facing ridge. Do you think that when they switch those winds like that they change their bedding up, or do you think they have kind of those homes and they just kind of
shift around a little bit? That deer was just so comfortable and was doing the same thing every day that no one messed with him.
Yeah.
And he'd send the other deer up there first. There was a small buck and does all go out, and kind of he would be the last one. But
was there much of a trail system coming up through there as well? Or
I think they come up out of the thick stuff, and they headed west on that ridge. And I think there was some private, and I can see fields. I think them does were starting to march, you know, west on that ridge, and kind of heading toward those fields, you know, probably getting there right around dark. He probably gets there right around dark. They probably get there before dark. But mm-hmm. That's I think that was, yeah, I bet you them fields were probably 600 yards. But I mean, they'll go, you know, they'll just mosey up. And it was wild. I seen the does come out, and it was like beeline. We have a place to be. And there was trails running that way. They come up and, That was their pattern, you know what I mean? It was pretty neat. They were going from point A to point B because there's trails running that whole length of that ridge. There's a fair amount of deer there, you know. But even the does come out, there was like, even with the wind, walking with the wind at their back, they weren't bothered because this is something they, you know, they're comfortable. No, you know, maybe with an exception of a coyote here or there, but no one messing with them as far as a predator, you know. So everything was, you know, no deer were like looking up in trees, and no one was hunting there yet. So It was a cool spot that I'm like, man, this could really happen, you know.
What were you seeing for sign that you picked that spot?
He laid down some nice rubs. I was expecting a bigger deer, but after having my camera there like mid-August till then, he was the only one there, so smaller deer. I know he rubbed a 6-inch tree. Wasn't real high, but he got the bark off it, and then there was a maybe size of a beer can, and he rubbed it up high, really, like, I'm like, that's a, and it was early, like, I'm talking second week of September. I'm like, man, that's a, he was a mature deer, you know, he wasn't a, you know, juvenile or anything, he was,
yeah,
he was a good deer, so, maybe he had a bigger rack at one time, and he just, but yeah, I seen all the rubs.
I don't know. What my dad said, that he was, you think he was old because he was chewing on, you know, that his teeth were wore down, but he was saying that he's just chewing on rocks. That's
chewing
why.
Chewing on rocks. He's probably a 2-year-old.
Tough deer.
Yeah. He ain't been to the dentist in a while.
we're John
on you a little bit earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we had to ride you with it a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Joe's looking at teeth. I don't know. I think he just. I was like, "Dave, he's old, Joe. Look at."
I think he's a year and a half just been chewing on.
He just chewing on at rocks down there. You get that in their mouth when they're down in West Virginia. You're right. I shot a immature deer. No, really, I ground him down with a file.
That's a good trick.
Yeah.
To make everyone think that it's an older deer.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't remember seeing a picture of the body. I think it, I don't know if you, there wasn't even a picture with you with it. Is are you sure you shot it, or did you hit it with your truck?
Yeah, I shot it.
All right.
Why'd you get a new vehicle recently?
Yeah, you're right. You did. Well, the front end of mine was kind of banged up.
Not related.
Yeah, not, you know what I mean.
Yeah, that was, that happened like end of September, not early October.
Yeah, it's been like that.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, that's awesome. It's good to get one like kicked off at the season there. It kind of, I don't know, it feels like it relieves a little bit of that anxiety, you know, like no matter as much as you're excited for deer season, you always have that like anxiety too of like when you have a tag still in your pocket. When you get one out of the way, I don't know, the way I feel is that you feel a little bit of relief. Do you feel that way?
Definitely. And I was like dealing with some target panic, which was bothering me a lot, you know, and then just shooting that deer helped out, you know, giving you that confidence that when a deer's in range, you could take it. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe this is the smallest deer I shoot all year or whatever, but at least I broke the ice. I got the monkey off my back, you know? So, yeah. And that's,
no, that was a good deer.
When I seen
him,
yeah.
With you about that.
No, yeah. No, but when I did see him, I'm like, you know, that the one morning I seen him when I was there, and I said, I'll take him. I'm taking him out of her, you know, so then when I decided to hunt that deer, then it was fun, you know what I mean? Like, this is the one I want to hunt. So it wasn't just like I'm waiting for any deer to come. I said, I'll take him. So yeah, that was, I think you could take like 3 buck in West Virginia.
Yeah.
I was talking to Bill.
Yeah. Wow.
So I did get a rifle tag and an additional rifle, but I was trying to somehow to try to get back down to bow hunt as if I have time to, you know, add another, you know.
Yeah.
But I think
Ohio, you have a North Dakota tag, you have a Pennsylvania tag, as if you have all this time. Luckily, I give you credit that you figured out, you know, this year as far as setting up your business so that you can hunt in October this year. Because normally, you know, Johnny's known as the late season guy, but that's because you don't really hunt normally in October. Mm-hmm. Like, you've always been, you know, starting, you know, even sometimes late in the rut, like you don't get out until a little bit into November, and then December and January, you're always, you know, getting after it when everybody else is, you know, sitting on a couch, you know, stuffing their faces with Thanksgiving, Christmas food. And
Bo gives, throws a towel, and Bo, you want to go hunting? I'm done. I'm more burned out.
One time I said that was like, you're like, Johnny texted me like January 18th one year. I was like, you want to go Ohio? I'm like, I really don't want to go. I know. You've given me crap for that sense, and I promise you I won't say no now.
I remember that year we were picking sheds up, and Johnny's still wanting to go hunting.
Well, we were down in Ohio last year. My buddies come down, and I'm going up in the woods with my bow. They're across the street picking up horns. <You know? laughs> So the next day, I'm like, you know what? I got up in the morning, and I just started a fire and started drinking. I didn't go hunting. So, I think it was pretty wild because, you know, I didn't start hunting last year till like November 14th after the veteran sign. That's the first time I got to hunt. I think I went and sat in the woods once or twice to jump out, but it wasn't like, you know, I'm serious about my hunt. But then you go all year and it was like that. Like your brain's in go mode. It's hunting season. I'm hunting. And then when I decided to throw the towel in, it was like a weight off my back. You know, you got to hunt. I got to go because that's the frame of mind you're in. And that next day I said, I'm done for the year. You know, it's like if you do shoot your one and only buck that you wanted to hunt and you just like drink a bit, celebrate, you know? So like, and that's what I say about hunting the whole season. Even if you don't like kill a deer, you know, once you decide it's over, I that next day I just drank beer. I said, and I just sat there and enjoyed my, you know, reflected on the season. It's over and I'm done. And I'm drinking beer and not thinking where, you know, looking at my phone, wondering where, you know, where I should grab a camera or where I should go hunting tomorrow or what the weather is. It's like all that stuff that you do to try to figure these animals out. Then you just, it's just gone. It's like crack a beer. I'm done. You know?
The Spartan Forge app utilizes years of military background and machine learning to pull from millions of data points to accurately predict deer movement with over 30 years of GPS collar data, trail camera data, academic, and state research. The app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery, mapping, journaling, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. The latest update is huge. One feature that I'm using a lot during the rut is LiDAR. LiDAR basically removes the trees from the landscape and allows you to see every nook and cranny, logging road, boulder, etc., with some areas having 1 meter data, which just means that you can see any deviation in the land as small as 3 feet. During the rut, I will look for logging trails that intersect with key terrain features such as ditches or draws to funnel deer movement. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and for quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Yeah, once you admit you have a problem, then there's relief there. It's an addiction.
It's bad, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it is funny, though, like you wait all year for hunting season and you can't wait. And then, but there also gets that, there's a point where you're like, I really want to shoot something. Like you almost like build this anxiety in yourself like that. I don't know, like Mason and I talked about it today on the phone. Mason called me today to talk. He's like, should I take off work, you know, tomorrow or the next day to go hunting? And he's like, I don't know. He goes, I just all of a sudden started getting stressed about hunting season.
Yeah, I was panicked at work today for no reason. I just started thinking about hunting, getting in my own head. I called, well, what are your trail cameras doing? What's happening? Because I'm not seeing anything. And, yeah, I only have limited time this year because I spent all my time out in Montana. So taking a time off was a bad decision. Not that I was half considering it, but Bo's like, yeah, definitely just save your time. Nothing's happening relax. On my end.
John's out there busting his ass. And he ain't seen nothing. Just relax.
Yeah.
And I said, you're not alone, Mason. I said, my cameras aren't like fired off or anything anyways. Like they're not, mine aren't anything crazy. So,
and then he's talking me off my ledge and then he starts venting like he's going to therapy about what he's trying to find his bucks now too.
Yeah.
And,
it's therapy time.
Bo's unplugging me here. So
yeah. That's enough. Sorry.
you pointed to it.
It looks like it's half out.
Can you still hear out of it?
Yeah, I can hear you good
check,
now.
Check, baby.
So he's talking me off the ledge, and then he starts talking about how he can't find his bucks that he's looking for and this and that. And then it's so easy to give somebody else advice, like talk them off the ledge, but then it comes back to you, and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I have nothing going for me. Yeah. I'll never kill a buck again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's it's funny. I went through a cycle this week of like, as I was out scouting, and I couldn't find any sign. Like I someone had messaged me on Instagram about, they were like, hey, you know, I'm checking these spots and I'm not finding any sign. I'm doing, you know, the things, and I'm like, you're not alone. Like I said, I can't find anything right now. Right. That's just normal. Like you go through these phases of you can't find, you could be doing the right things. It just might not be happening, or it's not, you know, they're not laying down sign yet or whatever it might be. And it's just like, my advice is just check more spots. Like just keep moving. I mean, no matter how much we think that we might have something figured out or you have a clue, it's just constantly just keep trying and moving, or, and you know, depending on what you're looking for the time of year.
Well, with this cold front that came in, I think everybody had high expectations. I know I did, and I wasn't seeing the movement that I was expecting to see. But, you know, like the Spartan Forge app said normal.
It's
the core area. Yeah.
It was. I'm like, this is wrong. It's going to be cold. We're going to be moving. And I was out for 3 days. I told Bill, I was like, spot on, Bill. Yeah, it was core area, normal movement. Yeah. I didn't see shit.
Yeah. No, it was. I thought the same thing. I was like, this can't be right. Like,
it can't be right.
This can't be right. We're getting snow. I said, historically, you know, snow and then rain. And then after, these scrapes are going to be wide open. Big buck's going to come in 18 yards and he's done.
Yeah.
Like that's, it was in my head. And Spartan Forge kept saying core area, like basically terrible, you have to be close to them, and I didn't know where they were bedded at this point. Like I haven't been out enough or having tabs on any of these deer, and I just didn't feel, you know, confident in it. And it was spot on, and you know, this is a point where you kind of got to adapt. You know, I talk a lot about historical data and how it helps, but there's sometimes that historical data isn't always right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I sat a scrape that 2 years ago, this one buck I was hunting October 14th at 8 o'clock in the morning, just did, you know, was, he came out and hit this scrape. I'm like, it's going to happen again. Same exact weather conditions. I didn't see a dang thing. What's going on?
My neighbor's here.
Oh, is he?
I'm going to keep talking, but I'm going to talk to him.
Okay. So sometimes that happens that way, and there's not anything that you can do about it, really.
Yeah, it, you know, when I wasn't seeing anything, the last two nights I've been pouring over camera data for back to 2009, as back to trying to correlate, you know, because I, you know, there's one year, I think it was 2018, there was activity on October 10th or 12th, 13th, and 14th, heavy activity. And it was actually a full moon, you know, that, and, but it was cold, and it's like, you know, am I missing something here? But most of the majority, I'd say 95% of my information that I went back through is, you know, these next couple of days, you know, the 20th, well, today or tomorrow, 21st, 22nd, you know, you start seeing some of the younger bucks daylighting, but come around the 25th, 26th, 27th is, you know, when you start getting the big boys daylighting. I mean, you have your exceptions. You can have a big boy, you know, middle of the month, or even, well, I had them in end of September on scrapes. But yeah, it was, I was, you know, shocked, I guess, to say the least, about not having the activity that I was expecting here the last few days.
Well, I think too, like the early October and the mid October, it can be really good, but I think you got to be close to where they're bedding.
Oh yeah.
I think you got to have tabs on where they're, you know, bedding at, or get lucky that scrape is that close to where they're bedding. If you don't know, you know, that's in my opinion, and I don't think any of my cameras were located in locations where it was, it was good, really.
Yeah. And I don't sit on beds either, because, you know, I'm a scrape hunter, and if I can get a scrape close to a bed, that's great, but I don't feel they bed in the same, they're not consistent in their bedding. So I don't have
anything real close to their beds that, that I could feel confident. And if I do, I do have some ideas where some of these nice bucks that I'm hunting are bedding, but there's no easy access, and they're bedding here for a reason. I know I'll get busted trying to get in there, so I don't want to push the issue this early, I guess.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Joe. A couple spots, I'm like, southwest wind, I can maybe get in there hunting, but exactly what you said, it's early. I don't want to F it up now.
Yeah.
When it's going to be good and the time's going to be in there. But that's, I mean, what you said you were thinking and saying, my mind was the same thing. I was like, I got places I can get in, but it's early. I don't want to mess it up. I know I can.
Yep.
Yeah. It's going to come. But what you were saying earlier, Bo, about like not finding the scrapes, me and you had put a camera out this summer together, July 4th, and made a scrape. I had a pile of does hitting it all summer. These does hit it. And I think I maybe had one buck on it all summer. I'd check it maybe once a month. Doe. So on the 15th, 16th, I checked it. Does. Sprayed some shit on a scrape. And I checked it on the 18th. A doe hit it on the 16th that night. And that night and next night, two nights in a row, there was a total of 7 bucks that hit the scrape.
Wow.
And there's scrapes in the woods. So, like you were saying, you keep scouting and find it. You're not finding it. So, maybe one out of 50 does is in heat coming in, like maybe 24th. Yeah. Or, you know what I'm saying? 25th. Because I know last year in that spot, I rode down that road and I seen 140 inch on October 25th at 2 o'clock while it was raining chasing a doe. So I'm like, I'm going back there this year, and we're getting right on the heels of that 25th, that date. Maybe that doe's still there, and maybe that's maybe she's the one to hit that scrape
right
on the 19th, 18th, 19th.
I think this podcast will actually go out that right around that. Yeah, it'll be got the 25th, so that'll be right at the time as this is starting to.
So I think I'm fortunate. I got an area, and I've been sticking with that area that maybe, you know, there's scrapes. And 7 bucks just showed up. You know what I mean? Well, I mean, you know, like, they're cruising at night, and then if that doe's there, I mean, not saying she ain't going to wander around, but it's like when I do, like, historically put that in the back of your mind when you see something happen like that in the following year, you want to get there about the same time, especially that earlier 25th, that buck was chasing a doe. I'm like, wow, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So,
yeah, and I use my camera data for fawn birth. You know, when I pick up a fawn in the spring, I'll go back 200 days and try to figure out about when they might have been bred, and I log that information. You know, I think a doe, you know, I think their core areas, they hang around the same area, you know, from unless she was chased out of the area and he got bred, but it gives me a good idea, you know, at least gives me some hope that, you know, maybe there'd be some action happening that time frame.
Why is this the first time I'm hearing about this, Mason? That's some good information.
You don't listen when I tell you, Bo. Okay.
That's it. You don't listen. He told you all this. If you would just listen to your dad once.
I listened to your podcast, and you're like, man, this is real good information. I'm thinking, I've told him all this stuff.
He has so much in his computer processor brain, he doesn't think that we can handle it.
Yeah, he's probably right.
Yeah, a couple hours ago, we were talking about hunting evenings versus mornings, we were talking about evening hunts, and my Uncle Joe starts going, back in 1987, I killed one in the evening, 1995, 1999, just listing off the years he got his bucks in the evening. It's like, how do you remember all that?
But I told you about this fawn birth thing when you were 3. I mean, I can't help it if you can't remember.
Yeah, you sure remembered.
See, I'm gonna tell you one time, Bo. That's it.
That's what I'm dealing with.
Should have got him a notepad.
It's like when I got kicked out of hunting his tree stands. Like I wasn't allowed to hunt them. I was around 18.
Cut the cord sooner or later.
You gotta
cut the cord.
Get on your own.
I was in college. I didn't have time to come home and scout. You know, and. He's like, no, it's time for you to, you know, push me out of the nest, and I didn't even have wings yet.
I know. I talked to Bo once in a while over the past. What's your dad saying? I don't know. He won't tell me. Your dad. He don't tell me. I don't know what he's saying. What kind of sheds he find? He won't tell me. I'm like, what? Really?
He shares more with you than he does me.
Yeah.
Maybe you're, yeah, you're his.
Johnny's a son he never had.
Yeah. Son he always wanted.
Yeah. Mason, what about you with late October? What's like in the past, what's your luck been or like camera shown or anything as far as like what you're looking at?
I definitely like scrapes the end of October. I wouldn't say that I'm overly successful. That seems like the last four or five years I've been more of a second week in November guy. Just I don't know if it's by chance or what, but yeah, definitely I like my morning hunts too. I always have a lot of confidence going into mornings versus evenings, where every day I wake up and walk to my stand in the dark, climb up, I think it's going to be the day. I have that feeling every single morning. I love my frosty mornings. Mm-hmm. Even if it's going to be 60, 65 during the day, if it's going to be a nice frosty morning, man, I think it's going to happen every time.
Yeah.
It's tomorrow, I think. I'm going to say it.
All of us are going to sleep in.
Not I know. Me. I've been saying that. I think tomorrow's going to be good.
I'm going to be out. I'm going to be in my tree at 6:30.
All right.
Because I got that one. I'm going to shake hands with him. Am I laughing?
No. You're serious.
But I'll be shaking Bo when one walks by my camera tomorrow morning and I'm at work. He talked me out of it.
I told him not to take off. Don't listen to me. You can't go by my advice.
It just feels like one of these days it's just going to open up.
It has to. Yeah, it's going to.
We've been having phenomenal weather in October. And I think, like, yeah, if we get like the weather we had this past week, you know, next week, I think as this podcast goes out, like this week, I think can be just phenomenal.
So what do you think, Joe? Like, I looked at the weather. It's supposed to be next week 60s, yeah, maybe 70. I mean, yeah. What's your opinion? I mean, we're getting into pretty hardcore pre-rut, just morning, evening still, or any
well, going through some of my camera data, you know, back to 2009, the last few days, I think October 30th is the day, but that's a Sunday, so you're not going to be able to go out.
Yeah.
That, to me, is where the most, when it seems like it starts as far as the mature bucks on their feet in daylight, from my camera information. No, I'm just going to play it by ear as far as my time off, or I may hunt a couple mornings here next week. It's going to be a day before decision for me on what days I go. But, you know, come Halloween, or, you know, the 29th would be that Saturday. But from there on out, I'll be off work that first week of November for sure.
How about like now when you're like, if you have an evening or after work or a Sunday, or not a Sunday, like a day that you would you rather hunt or go check cam? Like we were talking earlier, like keep checking cameras and like.
Yeah.
Till you get, I mean, like this time of year, 25th, 23rd, 22nd. I mean, do you keep trying to find fresher sign? I mean,
definitely want to try to find a fresh sign, but I'm going off of historical data as well. So that's why I'm going through and see. And right now, you know, I don't have anything that says this is where I need to sit tomorrow, even though the weather conditions are going to be there. But I know I'm probably going to be wrong. I know one of my cameras is probably going to show me where I should have been.
Yeah.
Spartan Forge is still saying core area.
Yeah, core area.
So maybe normal. It's...
I think abnormal Saturday.
Yeah. I haven't looked at it like out past for this area at least yet, but yeah.
But when you start seeing that how it is correct, you really believe, like, then it's that much more of a tool to have. Like, okay, I'm not going hunting today, or because I have something else I need to do at home.
Yeah, when you're trying to battle like vacation, or you're battling, you know. You know, your boss is not a good person, but like,
yeah.
but you know what I mean? Like when you're trying to like, and say like in Mason's shoes, where he's looking at like, okay, I have 5 days of vacation left. When am I going to use them? That's a very good tool to be able to
definitely
to use for that, to determine, you know, when you're going to go out. My, and in my opinion, I guess.
Yeah, and especially if it aligns with some of your historical camera data, which it most likely will.
Yeah.
That gives you that little extra bit of confidence to, yeah, this is the day, this is when it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Mason, you're talking about mornings. Like, I've never, I was talking about this with Zach Varenbaugh on a podcast that'll come out next week, but I've never killed a deer during like late October or the rut first thing in the morning, even though it feels great. To me, it's always like when the frost is burning off, like almost like that 9-10 o'clock in the morning time. You know, it's still cold, but it's not where it's, you know, it's not at the 70 degree mark, but it's not also at the 29 degree mark. Like I it could just be my setups too, that aren't like, they're not bedding type setups or, you know, scrapes that are, you know, associated with does most of the time is what it is, or travel kind of areas. And I believe that, like, especially when it starts getting into the rut, that those bucks are waiting for those does to bed down. And sometimes those does aren't bedding down, you know, first thing in the morning. It might take them a couple hours after daylight before they get settled in.
Yeah.
And this is my thought, is those bucks are just laying, they take a little break. They've been out all night mm-hmm. running. They take a break. They lay down for a little bit and then they get up and they go and start checking out those does. I don't know. That's just been my experience with it.
No, I'd second that for sure. I did shoot one of my last good bucks at first light, but for the most part, even on days that I'm not getting bucks, which is more days than not, is the action is definitely picking up after the frost burns off.
Yeah, I always seen that, and there's times I would go in like maybe a little bit after light, just because I'm like, there's so many times I sat that got out there at dark and sit, and it's like I don't see nothing till that starts heating up.
Yeah, there's only, yeah, and it's like two waves. You want to be there at daylight,
yeah,
because it can happen, and then, you know, in your situation, I've had a couple of nice bucks I've killed at first light, but then there's a lull. It seems like until maybe, you know, 9:30, 10 a.m., then it starts picking back up.
Yeah. What about scrape locations? You know, late October here. Or like what is a scrape that triggers, you know, let's start with you, Johnny. Like what, when you find a scrape that you want to hunt and you're like, I'm going to hunt this, you know, late October into November, what makes that like a scrape you want to hunt? Cause there can be hundreds of scrapes in the woods at that point.
I think a lot of the smaller ones are insignificant, you know, not a lick and branch, but, the bigger ones, if they're shitting them, I feel like, man, they're feeling really good. They're even going to take a dump there. You know what I mean?
I never thought of that.
No?
No, I never saw that. Or never thought of that, I guess.
Yeah. No, I've seen shit in the scrapes.
Yeah, so.
I never overthought it too much.
I feel like if they feel so good about the spot that they got to drop a deuce.
You don't shit in your scrapes, do you?
I ain't going to say. That's my secret.
Yeah, no. All right, so bigger scrapes, licking branch.
So, yeah, bigger scrapes, licking branch. Yeah, something significant. The bigger, the better. If it's the size of this table, it's like, whoa. A lot of deer are hitting it. Yeah, that time of year, just that's, you know, they're trying to communicate, you know. And if there's a lot of deer communicating, then it's always about being downwind, you know, like don't, you know, you could set up on it if you can have a good wind or, you know, but they just like the place I'm hunting now is a flat and, it drops off and the deer come up with a thermal, you know, the wind blows that way all the time, southwest, and they come up and they just start scraping. Just, I think after being bedded all day, and that's where a lot of rubs, like I thought about it. I think after being bedded all day in that core location and their testosterone's already ready, they could breed a doe right now. But in their core, there's, you know, they want to, it's like, I feel like they're just like ready to go. Like
bottled
to,
up.
Like yeah,
you,
bottled
like
up.
You shake a Coke bottle before you pop a tap.
Yeah, and then they're going to get out, and then that's when them, you know, a couple hundred yards from where they're laying all night, you start finding them scrapes. But that kind of, what that tells me is that this is where they're heading right at dark and that, and try to get, use the wind, go down maybe 100 yards closer, try to get near their bed as long as you ain't messing with them, you know. But, yeah, something with a bigger licking branch, bigger size to the scrape, fresh. So, But then make sure all the components are there. Make sure, which it will be if that scrape's there, the does are close, or you know, he's trying to claim that territory, cover everything. That's probably where we're gonna find that, you know. And then hunting pressure is a big thing too, you know. Just pay attention to the pressure if that's messing with them. How, you know, then it comes into play. Is this totally nocturnal? Would this time of year? It probably majority of it is in a 2018, 19, 20 range, but not saying it all is, but.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah, but it's a lot of that with your cameras. Now you're going to have to figure that stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, It's always a learning process, and it never ends. You know what I mean? You just, the place I'm in, I've been hunting here 8-10 years. I'm dropping more pins and learning more about it and checking spots and fine-tuning and stuff like that. And so, yeah, just it's a never-ending game.
Yeah. What about you, Dad? What's your ideal scrape location look like?
Well, I ran 15 cameras on scrapes pretty much year-round here. And I got two of them that have had year-round activity to where, you know, maybe twice a month, you know, even back in March, April, you know, there'd be two times in that month, and, you know, between 7 and 13 days apart, they'd be hitting the scrapes. And you can see that, you know, the knobs, even the does were hitting them. And so those two scrapes have me kind of excited. But the problem is they are close to bedding. And they are very difficult to get into, I think, without the perfect situation. I did do a hunt on one of them mainly to get in and check my camera here the other day. And, you know, I sent you the photos. They were nighttime, though. But throughout the summer, I have a lot of daytime activity going on those scrapes that I was actually surprised with. Now they're definitely... This last month they have been nocturnal, and I haven't had any pressure there. Whether other people have been in there and put some pressure on, or it's just their nature, you know, that they're nocturnal this time of the year. But sooner or later they're going to start, you know, showing themselves in daylight. But other than that, you know, I still like my creek bottom scrapes. But yeah, they have to be. You know, it seems like this time of year they hit them and then they might go dormant for a week if you're after one particular buck. So if you go and check your cam and you have the information, you got to just try to time it out and don't want to waste your time, I guess, you know, sitting there hoping he comes back in 2 or 3 days. He could, but just from my experience and my past information, it doesn't seem like it happens that way, at least the bucks that I have been hunting. Now, other bucks can visit it, so there is, you know, the chance anything could show up. But scrapes are my go-to setup, you know, starting here and probably next week.
Yeah. What about you, Mason? I don't even know if I know this answer before you say it, but are scrapes a big part of your setups, like it's late October, November?
I don't know. I feel like a lot of my stands are pretty goofy setups where I have spots where I just get a good feeling. I feel like this is where the bucks are going to come through. And if there's scrapes there, I feel better about it for sure. Late October to me, in my mind, I'm thinking about my ideal late October setup. And it's like a 20 or 30 year old stand of trees, or it's kind of a lot of like pole trees where they're just barely big enough to get a stand in, a lot of beech brush, some scrapes nearby. So I like something about those pool stands this time of year. I just really like.
That's good, and it's funny because when you and I scout together, I always try to pull information out of here, have you think of it, because you just know from experience, like as far as like what feels good or what, you know, looks good. But remember, I remember you and I were scouting this spring and we came to a spot and I agreed with you. You're like, this is where I'd set up. And I was like, why? And you're like, I don't know. It just feels good. But it was just like, but it was kind of that situation. It was kind of those pole stands and it had like this, it was like a little bit of a kind of an opening there, just where it crested over the hill. It had, you know, it had that, you know, so it had that spot where you could see a buck, you know, moving along that hill and feeling good, had some thick cover that made them feel good. And I think a lot of times we can overcomplicate, but it's like, all right, what you look at it, it's like, all right, does this, if you were an old deer that's trying to escape people and also look for does, you know, is there something here that's lining up to, you know, with this cover and everything makes them feel secure and do it? You know, after you and I scouted there, I came across a spot that I actually revisited yesterday in the spring. And I was like, this is where I want to set up. But it took me, after saying that and then trying to, more so like as I try to, you know, be able to educate even like through this podcast and everything is like, why, you know? So I'm looking at, like, I started pulling out the map and I'm like, okay, there's a draw. It's coming up here. We got a cut here and a swamp here. And it's just like, they're going to travel through here. You know, there's probably gonna be does bedding in this cut. There's a bunch of briars in there and there's those, you know, types of things. But no, that's interesting about the pole stands. That's a good add on there. Some of those older cuts can be pretty good. I like those a lot. I think you spend a lot of time in those.
Yeah.
Uncle Mike spends a lot of time in those.
I really like if you have a newer clear cut that's like 4 or 5 years old and then you have those pole stands on the downwind side of it, getting in those pole stands, that's, I love those setups.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely is. So one thing that I put a question out on Instagram about what people's biggest struggles are during the rut, and ended up with like 380 responses, and no joke, over 80% of them were the same question worded a little bit or differently. One was, I'll word it like a couple of the different points from it. Basically is confidence in your setup, or which spot to go to when you have multiple ones that you could go to, and how long do you give it as far as like, do I sit here for 2 days? I sit here for 8 days. You know what? And we're all like smirking for anyone that's listening to the audio version, because like we all have these conversations constantly, and it usually takes a lot of times me calling one of you other guys to like be like, hey, you know, this is, and because it's easier to give advice to somebody when you're not the one that's personally invested in that situation.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Mason?
No, we all go through it. It's a matter of waking up every day, having anxiety, talking yourself through it. It's one thing that helped me is not so much this year, because I'm looking for one buck this year, but years where I'm not really focused on one buck is getting all of your stand setups, put all your best stand setups on a spreadsheet, mark the best winds for them, and then you wake up in the morning and you check the wind and it's like, okay, southwest wind. You filter out, you look at your southwest wind stands and it's like, okay, there's 2 to 4 options. It's okay. Now I know where to go. These are my options for the day. It narrows down what you have to think about, and it really simplifies picking your spot.
It helps.
Simplifies?
I think it does. I mean,
yeah, it gets it down some.
Yeah. But when it gets complicated when you're looking for 1 or 2 bucks, but when you're just hunting, I mean, it to me it made it so much easier. Versus some days you get a wind and you pull up your maps, it's like, I don't have confidence in any of these stands, right? So also I think having a lot of stands helps too. Where I don't know about anybody else, but to me having a lot of options where you're hunting a fresh stand more times than not, you either haven't sat yet or you've only sat a couple of times, to me that gives me confidence.
So you bounce around more than sitting in the same tree?
It depends, but I feel like my confidence goes up more when I bounce around.
Gotcha.
I think it's all mental. I don't know if there's anything more to it, if it's strategic, but I feel better about it.
Yeah, but that mental side of it is that's a big deal. And Johnny talks about it a lot. You talk about it a lot. Mason talks about
it
a lot.
We talked about it today too. Is almost every morning we go to the stand, we feel like today's the day. But come like 10 o'clock, you're thinking about the next day.
Yeah,
you're thinking about where am I going to go rifle hunting? This ain't going to work. I told Bo today. I can only think of like one deer I've ever shot where I was confident I was going to kill a deer that day. It's like going to the stand, I think I'm going to kill a deer. But while I'm sitting in the tree, it's like, I should have been over here today. This ain't going to happen. And all of a sudden a deer shows up and I shoot it.
What I've been doing is, because I do the same thing, I think I did all my homework that I know I just got to get in a tree and pull my bow back because he's going to walk out. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, yeah. And then when the hours go by and you're like, you're kind of like, what? He ain't got any. Then the days go by, you're like, then you start looking at your maps. Where am I going to go? How come this ain't working? But what I started doing this year is like, okay, what are the reasons that put you here? Let's put them all down.
Yeah.
And say, okay, the wind is right. I was able to sneak in here every time. There's does that are right here. There's a lot of scrapes. Well, I got bucks on camera. And then the big thing is, did I put the pressure on the deer? Because we talk about pressure and deer and how hunters in general do it. But then when you start walking the woods, you're putting pressure. Did I mess it up? Was the wind going too much the wrong way? Is it swirling? Did I mess the spot up? You know, but I put all the positive things down, like in mentally say, okay, there's five reasons. Yeah, that one day I spooked them two does here. But I think for the most part, my wind's right, everything's good, and it can be a waiting game. But if you've got to reassure yourself, you know, that, yeah, these are all the reasons that put me here. So let's just help your confidence when the hours go by and you're not seeing the deer that you want to shoot and stuff like that. But then I was talking about being realistic. Okay, well, I bumped that one buck here, and then my wind was blowing the wrong way yesterday I was in here, and so maybe there's more reasons for you to go to another spot, you know, but then again, if you get into the right again, some random buck could come through. But for the most part, if you got there's some areas I can hunt every day and the wind's right, but you got the wind swirling this and that, and you start letting one or two deer know. It's like they have a conversation with each other through the woods and they say, this dude's down or don't go. I swear they have language somehow. I don't know how it is, but, but I feel like, you know, it's that's what I like about hunting. It's not as sometimes not the physical game, but it's mentally, like,
it's more of that than anything, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're right. It's more mental. It's,
especially based on that survey too.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, mentally it's a game that you're playing in your head to see if, you know, to figure it out. But then, like what Mason said, I have a ton of spots, you know, all over, you know, whether it's one deer and you got all these spots, or you got and then we talked about earlier, like, even if you have to do it after dark, go check a couple cameras, you know, and I try to keep some spots close to the road that I can have, you know, I don't live here, so I can get about 4, 5, 6 cameras checked, boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, okay, I got some good spots. You know, if you got like two spots that are way back in the woods, you got to walk all the way back and, you know, it's like, it's no good. So you got to have a variety, have some close to the road where you can, or you get out and say, you're going to get out and eat lunch, I'm going to grab a couple cameras. Oh, like today I got out and, I was able to check 4 or 5 cameras real quick. Invasive went in and out right along the road. So that's to have more options. And then there's times where you're checking cameras, you're 4 or 5 buck. Hey, it's happening right now, you know? So let's abandon this ship. And I think let's jump on board here and keep, like, scouting's always in all of our, you know, like that's always, when you're in that stand, you're kind of looking at, you know, you pull your map up, you're looking at, like, that's what I look at. I mean, at noon, I'm going to check east to make a play for the night, or I can come back to this spot. Just having all your options, you know what I mean? But don't sell yourself short on your spot if you ain't been screwing it up, you know? It's just...
Yeah, I mean, in the big woods, it's not... You're not... The deer aren't always just... They're not always going to be through there. Just because it's a perfect morning, it doesn't mean that they're going to come in front of you. You know, I mean, there's like, if you have a good spot that you feel good about and things are lining up and you look at your pros and cons list and you're looking at stuff, like, it's probably going to happen at some point. But there is that line of like, do I sit there for 10 days straight and after, you know, day six, I ain't seen anything. You know, that's a hard, and I struggle with it too. You know, I don't put a limit on. I've sat in some trees for 6 days in a row, and then there'll be some I bounce after one, and it's really hard to put it into this, you know, like information on the podcast of like when to do it, and there's not really a hard number or whatever that you can do. It's more of kind of one, I think Johnny put it really good, of like the feeling of, okay, did I blow everything out in, you know, this area? Did I bump things in coming in? You know, what was I doing? Now during the rut, it's a little bit different. You know, there's deer coming from everywhere. Those bucks would be, that buck could have been 3 miles away, right, coming over there. And he just knows that doe group was there from when he came and did a loop in the summer. You know, like he's coming to look for those deer, and that doesn't matter. Like there's times where I've hunted right on doe bedding areas, knowing that I was going to blow them out, not caring because I was like, a buck's going to come look for them.
You're right.
Yeah. The scent's there. The scent's laid down. You blow them out, it's no big deal.
It don't matter. Yes. And that's snorting and that, it don't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care about it during the rut. What about you, Dad?
Well, I agree with Mason. I do narrow mine down to the wind directions, but that still might take me down to 4 or 5 stands sites. So, and I don't know if you remember, you know, I'd lay maps out for you, you know, just in case something happened, I didn't come home. And, but I'd have, you know, 3, 4, 5 waypoints circled. I could be in any one of these stands. And like, you don't know where you're going. No, I don't.
Yeah, you're right. Yep. Yeah.
And I start driving and I let my gut take over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a feeling that I can't explain, but that usually directs me. And, you know, I end up in one of them. And most of them don't have cell service, you know. But yeah, I rely on that, but I think that gut instinct is more based off, you know, the camera history, the years of history hunting those areas,
experience.
It comes down to the experience on it. It makes you feel better about the spot, and then you might get in there, and then, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock rolls around, and say, you know, you plan on doing all these sitting, it's like, no, it just don't feel right, and. You know, for whatever reason, maybe the wind's swirling a little bit, this or that, which during a rut, I sit through that type of swirls, or if you blow the doe out, I sit through that because, or even if a deer starts blowing at me, you know, I blow back at it, and, you know, it seems like that helps some, unless they want to get into a,
you know. Well, yeah, it depends on the blowing. Like, if it's like, and you hear them going away, it's like, all right, you're not recovering from that one.
But if they're sitting out there and they just blow once in a while, and it's just like you're hoping they're going to leave, but then you're trying to make it sound like you're deer too, and you're smelling the same thing, but it's okay, just hang around and just shut up, you know, kind of thing. And I've had bucks come by 15 minutes later after a deer blowed at me.
You know, they're like, there's a deer there, and it's a doe, and it could be in heat.
Yeah,
so he's going to come check it out.
Yeah.
So I guess it comes down to gut feeling for me, you know, from the experience. And as far as the number sits in a day, you know, the buck I shot last year, I sat the day before all day and never seen a deer. I sat the day before that. Well, I had an encounter with them that morning on the ground. That's why I put the stand, you know, climbed up in the saddle there. But then they had that bird hunter come in under me that Friday evening.
Yeah.
And that's like, usually I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be screwed up for a week, you know, or a few days, but I mean, they're so used to the bird hunters anymore. There's a lot of bird hunters out there, and them deer are used to the dogs and that intrusion. I don't think as much of an intrusion anymore as like it used to be, or at least I used to think it wasn't a big intrusion, and I'd avoid those areas. But
you're probably the best person to speak on this based on your season last year, because I remember all of us were. You were hunting that big buck that you ended up getting, and you were going days upon days without seeing much at all. And all of us were having phenomenal days.
Oh, yeah. I'd listen to you guys, and, oh, I seen this buck, I seen this and that. And if it wasn't, honestly, if it wasn't for Bo and Rhonda, you know, in my ear, just,
Yeah.
You got to hold out. You know, they even had Kurt on board. You know, I'd be talking to Kurt on the phone. Oh, Dad, you got to hold out for that buck. It's like, you don't get it.
Yeah, God.
How long can you
talk to him?
He wouldn't even respond to my text anymore.
How long can you sit in a stand and not see anything? And
you know. So what were you doing there? Were you moving stands a lot, or were you sitting the same ones?
I had only one fixed stand. And then I would go in the saddle, had a couple trees and just random trees, from still hunting, when I could still hunt, that I would climb. You know, actually the tree I shot out of wasn't one of the stand sites I had. There was a scrape there, and I did pick them up on that scrape, and it wasn't I wouldn't call it a community scrape. I'd call it an aggression scrape where it was tore up a little bit the one time, and that's what made me. And there was a nice trail there. I thought, well, maybe, you know, seems like it's a good doe trail, I guess, coming out of the clear cut. And I thought, you know, I'll see what's running this thing. And, you know, that you get in a rut, and then bucks are going to be, you know, coming down that trail, or at least, you know, coming through there. And I did pick them up on that camera. And so that's why I ended up, actually, when the conditions were right, I decided to still hunt that side of the clear cut. And I had my encounter with them. And then, I kind of tried to follow them and tried to, you know, keep on grunting at them. And got to the point where I wasn't turning them. He was chasing a doe. And I thought, well, I'm going to go back. I'm going to climb that tree and just wait the rest of the day out. And then and that's when that bird hunter ended up coming in on me that evening. And then I'm thinking, well, by then I'm wore down. I mean, this is,
mentally, yeah.
Yeah, I'm mentally wore down. It's just like, you know what, I've been all over this, around this clear cut in different stands for the different winds. And for the wind I was dealt with that Saturday, it's like, I'm just going to go back to that same tree again, even though that bird hunter was in there the night before. And then I, you know, the whole day thinking, I'm thinking this is the wrong move because I wasn't seeing nothing, you know, nothing. And then for lack of a better place to sit, I went in there that Sunday morning, you know, we're not on a hunt that Sunday, and it was a totally different world. I mean, the wind was right for what I wanted. Could I have gone some of my other stand sites with the wind I was dealt that morning? Probably, but this was it was the best setup I had, you know, based off the information I had. So that's why I gave it another day. I mean, you know, I've heard in the past people say, oh, you give it, you know, 3 days, you give it 4 days, you only give it, you know, your 1 day and you move on. But I think it comes down to your, you know, what you're seeing, and if you feel confident that you didn't screw things up based off of your entrance. I thought I had a good entrance and exit to that stand. That I don't think I messed it up the days I was in there.
Well, obviously not.
Yeah.
Well, it worked out.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was. I still think it was a stroke of luck.
I don't believe in luck. Everybody says good luck. I said, don't even tell me.
Well,
luck.
Johnny responds every single time I say good luck. I just say it out of habit. He says, don't wish me luck. I don't believe in
luck. I don't believe in luck. Everything you did, all your work, makes it happen. You know what I mean? Like, no, I don't, like, you know, I just, as I say, good luck. You know, I guess it's just a term. You say good luck, but I know. And then when you maybe luckily shoot a deer, I still don't believe, like, you were out there, you did your work, you researched it, maybe it was a new area, but you were there and you made it happen, you know.
So you should be saying your time. Follow your plan.
Exactly.
Instead of good luck. Follow your plan.
That's right. Follow your plan.
Follow your gut.
Follow your gut.
There you go.
I'm gonna start saying that to you now. Follow
your
gut.
And that's, I think I told someone that.
The problem is I have rock gut and it just kind of leaks out every direction. I don't know which way to go.
I think I just told you. I said, listen to your instincts. Just don't.
Yeah.
Then you start chasing cameras.
Yeah.
You know, get some inventory.
That's the other thing. Yeah. And I do it more this time of the year. I chase the camera. But I've sat, and I know you've sat over scrapes that had cameras on them,
mm-hmm.
where they just go downwind of the scrape.
Exactly.
Or they don't even hit the camera. I watched $5 one, this is years ago. I watched $5 go past my stand that never hit the scrape. I wouldn't have been there, I would have thought, oh, this scrape's
dead. And I've been, like, even tonight, like, all, you know? I'm going downwind as far as I can, usually about 100 yards, as long as I can get them. I'm not sitting there, because it's just, especially this early in the year, they're not, like, dumb. It's like, I'm coming. I got all day being in my core. You're looking at movement on Spartan Forge core. He's just chilling. He's just like chilling. He's like, he like lazily, I could see him just get up and just like scrape soda and just be like, you know what I mean? Not like I have to go. I don't have to, you know, go. Some deer, paw. I've seen deer just hit some of my scrapes, just hit the licking branch, not even paw it. You know what I mean? Like, oh, look at the leaves. Nothing's been here.
Well, those scrapes I was telling you about in the summer, that's all they did. They didn't paw anything. They always hit just the licking branch.
Mm-hmm. No, I think the downwind is a big thing. Now I'm just not even hunting over the scrape anymore. I'm just going downwind. Mm. You know, this time of year, I'm just going.
Yeah.
Like today, this morning, so I was on a flat, and then there was an east-west kind of where the flat kind of dropped down. Like an elevation change, maybe 50-foot elevation change, and the wind blew that way, and I just got right on the edge of that, you know, and the scrapes were like 100 yards in from that break in the elevation. It was just like a kind of a flat with like a ridge line, I guess it, and then the scrapes were like 100 yards up, you know, like south, and I just got as far as I could to that edge because I'm like, I don't even want to hunt the scrape because they could just... You know, this time of year being like, they're going to smell the scrape without even getting, I just went straight downwind and just sat there. I'm like, because this is where, to me, a mature deer is going to be, not just for the scrape, but the whole flat, the rant, like, you know, and that whole, like, break was east-west that went down and it was southwest wind. Like, he's just going to walk that whole edge if he wants. He can smell every scrape in the area, everything that's going on. So I got as far downwind and just, you know, this morning. Well, it was different this morning. I hunted over that scrape, and there was a thermal pulling the air down where it broke. And then I looked at my watch, 8:30. The thermals come up, and there was four doe on that flat. That's when they went down that hill. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
I think they were staged up there in the morning on that flat from the night before, and like I felt like the morning I can catch them deer like running east west, maybe a buck checking that scrape. You know what I mean? Because before the thermals started rising, because the wind was pulling it down, cresting that hill. But I think they were already up on that flat from the night, hanging out. You know, just let's check that scrape. So like in the morning, I didn't mind hunting right over that scrape. You know what I mean? Right before daylight, the thermals were pulling it, cresting down. But I don't think the deer were down. It's vast down over that hill. I don't think they were down in there. They were on a flat from the night before, like how we said, like a frosty morning may lay in there. So then I think I felt comfortable hunting that scrape, you know. And then once the thermals started rising, that's when the does, at 8:30, I looked at my watch, and then here come does out of nowhere, and they were dropping down over that hill. That's where they wanted to be. So, I mean, there's a lot to it. Just got to, like... think about them and, you know, survival and playing the wind. But then again, you go back to the West Virginia deer. I was 5 days of northeast wind, and them deer left with the wind at their back. You know what I mean? But I think it comes with association. Like, hey, sure. We ain't never been effed with here. And then, like, the place...
Yeah, if they're comfortable, why change their pattern?
And, like, the place I'm hunting now where I told you, I never, knock on wood, where I just, the situation I was just in, I haven't seen anybody else hunting there where I feel like he might not, you know, in the evenings he comes up there, he might not have to get downwind in a scrape. He might hit it. But I'm just still, like, covering all bases. I'm getting downwind. But, you know, if a buck for the last 4 years was on that flat, not at the edge where it crest, where he'd be downwind, but he's just going to walk that flat if it worked every time for him. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know that, you know. So maybe our cameras will tell us something. But it's just... just always asking yourself questions and dropping cameras and learning and hunting.
Well, that's where the clustering of the cameras, you know, running multiple cameras on every possible trail system that may come through there would help you for the most part, I guess. Maybe not missing something, but then you're tying a lot of cameras up in one area.
Yeah, it
definitely works without a doubt, and that's what I ended up doing last year. Is once I found them
for a certain deer like that buck. Yeah, you dropped a bunch of cameras in there.
But
yeah.
I mean, I know you've been clustering a lot in the last few years. just because you do have a lot of cameras, and you can, and it does tell you a lot more than.
Oh, it tells you a ton. I mean, I've learned a ton from clustering cameras. Where I'll have like, I was telling you the other day about like up in, you know, one area, I have 13 cameras out, and I don't have much good in there, but I have one good buck, and he only hit one of those cameras, and they're very close together, some of them, and he only hit one camera.
Well, remember years ago, I was hunting that one buck, and I moved every camera I had. I had 9 cameras I owned at that time. I moved every camera I had around. I only picked them up on one scrape prior to that, but I had 8 other cameras around there within a couple hundred yards out to a half a mile trying to find his range, and never picked them up on another camera on another scrape.
Just the one scrape.
He only hit that one scrape.
I believe it. That big 8-point I killed 2 years ago too. There's one point I had 3 cameras on it, like in a triangle, right? One right on the point and 2 off the edges of it. And that 8-point, I never had a single picture of it on either of those 3 cameras. And I went in there one night just because I still had a good feeling about the spot. And I jumped them right in the center of the 3 cameras.
Wow.
Never had them on camera once.
Wow.
Either of those 3.
That spot that me and you, well, I was just talking about earlier, where me and you put that camera on a scrape by that railroad bend there in the summer, and then the 7 bucks came in 2 nights, the doe hit it, and 7 bucks came. Well, I checked it this morning. 2 days went by, and it's easy access. I checked it, and it's like nothing hit it. I think it was maybe a yearling hit it at like 8 or 9 in the morning. 20 yards from it, there was a big scrape. A buck come by, and a rub. I'm like... And he didn't hit my scrape. You know what I mean? And I'm start wondering, like, is this the one I'm trying to find? Should I be putting a camera on this deer? But it's you know, like you said, Joe said, maybe it is a big buck that they, I don't. Sometimes I feel like they're other, and I don't even want to. I'll make my own scrape. This is my. You know what I mean? Kind of like attitude like that. I ain't even going with all them does, and I got 3-year-olds hitting that scrape. Like there were 7 deer, but 7 bucks, but no like 140s, 50s, no monsters. And I'm like, maybe this is the one over here. You made it 20 yards away. I'm like,
well, I've had that happen plenty of times where you have a camera on a scrape and they'll make one on the back side of the tree.
Yeah. they'll change your scrape.
Yeah.
They'll relocate it around.
There's no doubt that cameras. Affect them, and certain deer are affected differently. There's some that love being there, having their photos taken, video, and they love it. They're kind of like Johnny. They just like being on camera. They like having
the attention.
They like the attention.
I mean, when you look this good, I mean, it's hard, you know.
Well, yeah, that's right, John.
Yeah, no, there's, but
photogenic.
Yeah, that's what we'll go.
Do you have insurance on your face, John?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I figured you did.
As I mentioned earlier, this is a 2-part series, so this one's cutting off, and we'll jump into the second part of this episode here on Thursday of this week.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.